purpose of your visit?
I'm going to see Bruce Springsteen's hometown.
I can't think of a better reason to visit the United States than to see the home of the boss.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon, sponsored by DoorDash and NetSuite. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Look at our podcast and search for Subbeacon. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Sonny Bunch, and in for Jonathan V. Last is our regular guest host, Matthew Continetti. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Vic. And, you know, I've given this some thought. I realized I'm the fourth Marx brother. I'm Gummo. You could just, you know, because he doesn't appear in every movie. It's various that's combinations.
Every now and then.
You guys are Groucho, Harpo, and Chico, and then every so often Gummo
in a pinch,
shows up.
Gummo shows up. Well, welcome, Gummo. How have you been all this time?
I've been doing well. Oh, I've had a good long weekend.
Uh-huh.
Vacation.
How was vacation?
A lot of fun at Ocean City.
That's in Maryland.
I learned a new nickname for Ocean City. Apparently, in my wife's youth, it was this is Ocean City, Maryland, not Ocean City, New Jersey. Mm. But it was referred to as Ocean. But
I think I have to beep that.
Yeah.
Well, really?
But you know, we've been going there for this is our second year now. Mm-hmm. We kind of moved south from Bethany down to Ocean City,
Delaware,
and it's great. It's great for the kids.
So it's not too skeevy, like, you know, worrying about it.
Well, you have to isolate yourself.
The teenagers.
You have to isolate yourself from the teenagers.
Okay.
So we stay in this place called Sunset Island, which is on the bay side, and it's all the townhomes, and a lot of young families go there.
Mm-hmm.
And then every so often you venture out, and that's where you
on
might...
On an excursion.
On an excursion.
Mm-hmm. During the day.
Controlled during the day.
Morning.
To Trimper's Amusement Park or to one of the mini golf courses, which are terrible. They really are.
Mini golf really is like a plague on beachside towns. Like, we went to Virginia Beach, we saw 40.
Right.
You know, 100 of them.
Some courses are quite creative.
And they were all empty. Every time we drove by them, there was never anybody.
They knew you were coming.
I assume they're all fronts for drug lords.
do your kids, are they old enough to play any of the games yet? No.
Oh, yes. So this was began last year with the arcade with my son, and it only accelerated this year. So skee ball.
Oh, he likes skee ball.
Throwing games, you know.
He's got to go
knock the clown down, but also arcade games. Now what they've done with some of the classic arcade games is they've blown up the screens. So kind of you have
And that's why they charge you $1.
Yeah, or Space
50.
Invaders at a very... But we
seen that.
We had a lot of fun playing those together. And then his favorite was a Nerf shoot 'em up. He was really good at that.
Mm-hmm.
And then here's one annoying thing. They had they have tickets. You know, you get tickets so you can get the junk prizes. And I won 500 tickets on one game.
Whoa.
And every single ticket came out of the machine. It's not like you get a credit.
Actual tickets.
No, you're holding it like
I had to. You had to sit there. It's like you're performing surgery because like every 100 or so tickets, you have to rip it off. And I'm like, son, hold this. You know, and
you know what?
Suction.
I like that.
And then
I like that because it's a spectacle. And then it makes people have to stop and say, look at me. Because I'm good.
Well, you're desperate for attention. That's why you would like that.
Well, it's like the slot machine, too.
I don't want people to look at me.
I want coins spewing out.
I was going to say, it's like in Vegas where you get, instead of getting like the slip, you get like 3,000 quarters.
I want quarters spitting out for five, and everyone has to stand around and say, the lights going out. Look at me.
Look at this winner.
I
did it. Look at this person. Look at this.
So you did what was too much.
Look at this skillful slots player over here.
Look, if it would be one thing if you just had to sit there for the 500 tickets, get them all out, and then go to the counter. But instead, you have to put them back into a different machine in order to get the coupon.
Okay, that's,
So it's just, it seems to me very, what they need is like a McKinsey study. You know, when Mayor Pete drops out of the presidential race,
he can
do like a consultant study of these arcades because make the process more efficient.
I assume that children are more like Vic, though, in that they like to have everything come out.
It's so unsatisfying if it's like on your card.
If the kids just got like a little slip that said 520 tickets, they'd be like, all right.
You know what's great, though? You get like 500 tickets, that's at least...
you could at least get like a water pistol that probably cost 75 cents.
I know. It's terrible. Tickets,
you know, if you ever look at the stuff on there, it's like 10,000.
Well, you know, one of the arcades at the mini golf last year, the boy cleaned house. Like he got so many. It was the same game that I won the 500 tickets last year. I won like 1,000 tickets and for him. And
wow.
And so he got all of this crap. But at that place, I think they must have realized we were onto them because it all of a sudden the ticket prices went way up over the course of 1 year. So they do. It's definitely stacked against you.
The one thing I did well, and this is a few years ago, was like the whack-a-mole thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I just told my son, get out of the way.
And you handled it?
Oh, just like lightning speed.
Just whacking those moles.
It's all in the wrist. Sonny, what's going on with you?
Not a whole lot. Not a whole lot. Just hanging out.
You look thinner and thinner. People won't notice this on the podcast. Well, yeah, but, you know.
I won't sound.
I don't know. So what is going on? It must be just diet. You stopped eating.
It's a real complicated thing. It's called diet and exercise.
It's leaving the beacon.
Yeah, leaving.
When he left the beacon, and all of his troubles.
You miss all the snacks.
All of his troubles went away.
There are no. I don't have like a giant table of snacks at my house that's full of cookies and that sort of thing.
Whenever we get in our office, you know, like a new box of snacks, right? I might take a couple and put them in my drawer.
You just got to hoard them.
Oh, to hoard them because from the crazy war room. I got to hide them.
It's like a Russian. It's like the Soviet Union. You know, people say there's enough for everyone, but there's not.
You're like a squirrel.
I'm like, yeah. Yes, absolutely.
I bet you forget where you put them sometimes. You come across later, it.
There's going to be a cookie tree.
Years later, there's a grandma's oatmeal cookie. Yeah.
And you'd eat it.
And I'd eat it because the shelf life. You know?
Well, those are made to
yes, exactly.
Those are made to last the Russian war.
I wanted to mention, I got a tweet from a listener, Kyle Griesinger. And you know what the tweet was? He said, hey, was that you at Willie and Habib's barbershop in Arlington? I got spotted.
Wow.
In the barbershop.
Spotted.
And you know
Gawker
what?
Stalker.
Yeah, I know. I have to go around in a sunglass and a hat now. But I think the reason why he spotted me is because on my way out, I do a whole goodbye to the whole barbershop.
Oh, you really?
Know? You're a regular.
I say goodbye to everybody.
You glad hand at the barbershop?
I shake hands. I say, you know,
you do like
Habib.
A line.
I do, and I try to remember their names.
Well, it's also your enormous head.
It's hard to
miss.
How can they not recognize you?
It takes a long time to cut.
With that noggin.
That's right. I get spotted miles away. But here's the dilemma that I have. The dilemma that I have is... the lady that I've been going to, she's very nice, she's a Vietnamese lady, right? But then she takes out, at the end, I always look forward to the little bit of the shaving cream and then the straight edge. You know, and then they sharpen things with a straight edge, which is the real deal. The last two times that she's had me, she's cut me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm like, ooh, why do I feel, it kind of feels like a little sting, right? And then I'll get in the car, I look in the rearview mirror, and I'll see there's blood.
Well, that's not supposed to happen.
That's not supposed to happen.
I even think that they're like safety straight edges. Like, I didn't even think they could cut you.
That's not
the
a
best,
thing.
The best.
The whole point of the straight edge is that it's not safe.
Right, it's a exactly. thing in my mind.
But you're usually a really good barber to do that, right? And I trust the other guys to do the really good. And so what do I do now? Because every time I go in, she's like, hey, come right here. You know, I'm ready for you.
Oh, you just have to go to a whole new barbershop.
Well, no, right. That's what happened with me.
That's what happened
remember?
With you. Yeah,
yeah.
I do.
At the Weekly Standard, remember? A certain lady cut my hair for years.
Uh-huh. A today's look.
We're not going to get into names here. But at a place.
Well, that was better than the
which
second
is
name.
It's still there. And anyway, and I didn't go for a few weeks. And then when I reemerged, her first words to me were, where you've been?
Oh yeah, no.
Where are you been?
Yeah, I'll forget
and
it,
I
man.
Realized
it's
I can't. I had to cut it off.
You can't.
So I avoid that place.
Yeah, you walk down the street, you see. You've been across the street.
In fact, just the other day, I was walking near Scott Circle in the city, and one of her colleagues, who used to cut Goldfarb's hair, was coming in the other direction,
and
we kind of both looked to the ground because we were ashamed.
Yeah.
You know, to
recognize
the former relationship.
That's really. very awkward. So I don't know what.
Well, this gets back to our whole conversation that like the relationship between barber and customer is too personal.
It's very intimate.
We have created this whole norm in our society that this is like a good thing that people should talk to their. No. Mm-hmm. We need the silent barbershops where nobody says anything. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And just sit there in silence.
Sit there and let them cut you.
It still doesn't matter because I never say anything. And the place I've been going to now, they know who I am. They know the way the hair. And of course, they're speaking in Vietnamese the whole time.
Okay.
But then they'll say to me, you know, they'll say like, we know you. We know who you are.
I don't say anything.
Do they want to talk about the news?
You need to get Frank Costanza in there.
They just...
Yeah, that's right.
What they're really saying.
That's right. So, yeah. Okay, well, I mean, that's it. That's
well, I like it. No, I love this place. Oh, but okay. I'm just saying, not talking doesn't lend itself to invisibility.
But it still doesn't solve my thing because do I tell her, hey, could you be careful because you've been cutting me the last couple
times? No, you just need
time.
To go to another barbershop.
Yeah, you just have to leave and find another barbershop. Yeah. Sorry.
I guess I'm just going to have to keep
her. Or you could kill her. You could have her killed. And then she'll be gone. You can just go
to
some other barber.
Or maybe a day that she's out. I'm just concerned because if I go back, I don't even want to whistle. I don't want to scare the other customers.
Do you make an appointment?
No, I walk in.
So you walk in and just so happens that she's always free.
You could stalk the place and wait until she's with another customer.
Right.
Like just walk back and forth.
Yeah, just go back and forth.
Just
like boom, and now's my chance.
It's close to your house.
And now, I go to the one on 10th Street, but he moved. I followed my other barber there.
You could set up shop at a Starbucks or something.
It's very awkward when you have a barber that likes you, and then you choose the other barber in front of them. It's a very awkward thing.
Mm-mm. Speaking of Seinfeld, it's a whole nother.
That's right. I'm just worried that I'm going to leave me with a scar. Speaking of scars, over the weekend, The Lion King... Get it? The Lion King Scar was still in third place, by the way, at the box office with $1.2 million. In second place was Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw with $14 million. And in first place was Good Boys, which took in $21.4 million. Box office thoughts.
How much did The Lion King gross in third place?
$12
million. Okay. Because I thought you said 1.2 million.
Oh, no, no.
Are you talking about the dailies?
You're right. I did say 1.2 because I can't see.
Okay. All right.
What about my glasses? we won't get into that right now.
You have so many maladies. You're being sliced up by your barber.
I pulled my flexor, my hip flexor.
You pulled a muscle. The blood is flowing into your eyes right now.
I can't even read this copy. But The Lion King is still lingering. I read somewhere that it made $700 trillion.
It is at $1.4 billion. I believe, 10th highest grossing film of all time worldwide.
Not Disney, of all time.
And it's Disney's third.
Ninth highest now. Ninth highest because it just passed Avengers Age of Ultron.
And it's Disney's third billion-dollar title this year?
Fifth.
This year. Endgame... Far From Home, Lion King, and what were the other two?
Hold on one sec. Let me just pull it up. Aladdin.
Aladdin made more than a billion. Wow.
Aladdin passed a billion.
Did you take any of your kids to see these movies?
4. Did you say Toy Story 4?
I did not. Mm-hmm. Toy Story 4 made, and we're expecting both Frozen 2 and Rise of Skywalker to also cross a billion. What a year.
Yeah, I mean, well, this is a real problem. I mean, it's getting to be a real problem. Disney, I think, has... I saw the numbers. I forget what they were. I don't want to look them up right now. But the number was something like Disney accounts for 45% of the annual box office take this year. One studio, almost half of what is made at the box office.
So people are going to see. Did you take any of your children to see Aladdin or The Lion King?
My children are so young. They don't really go to the movies. What we did, the billion-dollar movie that we mentioned that they did see. Was Toy Story 4 and the whole family. It was family entertainment. The whole family went and we all enjoyed it.
Do your kids like the other Toy Story movies?
It kind of off and on. They'll watch them, not so much.
The
boy saw Angry Birds 2 with his grandmother the other day and he says that Angry Birds 2 is better than Angry Birds 1.
What?
And it's the sequel. Okay. It's that rare sequel than the original
Empire.
Because apparently
it's the Godfather 2.
It's the Dark Knight
of Angry Birds.
It's the Dark Knight of the Angry Birds franchise. And he says, "What made it?" I said, "Well, what made it better?" He said, "This one has eagles that shoot ice."
What? How does that even work?
I don't know how it works. I don't know if he's just making it up.
Out of their eyes?
I'm not sure.
Or,
okay. I should ask more for more details.
Please do. Because
yeah, we need to
I didn't know Angry Birds. Does anyone play Angry Birds anymore? That was a thing.
I want to get my kids to go through the animated classics before they see the cannibalized live-action CGI monstrosities that Disney's foisting upon America.
The original Jungle King. Jungle Book. Was the Jungle King. Okay. Yes. You were talking about other, you know, Disney. What about the situation with Sony? Is it Sony Disney?
Sony and Disney. Spider-Man.
So what's happening there?
According to various reports, Sony and Disney were not able to come to terms to share Spider-Man with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So, like, without getting too deep into the weeds, Spider-Man is owned by Sony.
Yes.
The rights to Spider-Man are owned by Sony. Mm. And
they're not giving that up.
Disney owns now almost every facet of the Marvel Universe since they have absorbed
Fox.
Fox. They now own all of the Avengers stuff. They now own all the X-Men.
And Fantastic Four.
They own all the Fantastic
and
Four
Deadpool
stuff.
And Deadpool now.
Right. Deadpool is part of the... Yeah, right. So This is a character sharing situation, a very unique one that Sony and Disney worked out, and it was frankly to everyone's benefit because, again, this is my understanding of how the economics of it worked. Disney got something like 5% of the gross of the Spider-Man standalone films, so Far From Home and Homecoming, I don't know that Sony got much of anything from the MCU movies. Maybe they got a couple percentage points, but the MCU movies with Spider-Man. So you're
which were three of them,
which
right?
were which were I mean like Endgame,
Infinity
War.
So even though he's in, even though he's in there, they're not getting
right. So I mean, even if they only got a couple of points, that's still a ton of money because I mean those movies were huge, enormous hits.
Sony can use that.
So anyway, my understanding is that. Marvel and Disney came back to Sony and said, okay, we now want 50% of the gross if you're going to use MCU characters in the next Spider-Man movie. And Sony, I think very reasonably said, get stuffed. That's ridiculous. You know, we have a good thing going. So I don't know. My understanding, again, also is that this is not a 100% for sure done irrevocable separation of all of these things. But the long and the short of it is Disney wanted more money. Sony thought they had a pretty good thing going. And Disney, frankly, look, the flip side of the coin here is that Disney has no real business interest in allowing Sony to create their own cinematic universe, which is what they're trying to do with Spider-Man, right? They've got Venom, which was a huge hit, which was a huge surprise.
Venom.
$850 million or whatever that movie grossed worldwide. Enormous hit. They've got the Spider-Verse Into the Spider-Verse, which was a critical hit and not as big at the box office, but I think is primed very well for a sequel because audiences loved it and it picked up some steam on home video. So I mean, Sony has this idea that they are going to create a Spider-Man cinematic universe. Disney says, "Well, why would we want to help you build that? Why would we want to try and compete with that?" So there are good points on both sides here. It is unfortunate that such callow concerns as money. Are getting in the way of really the greatest storytelling in the history of the cinema, Marvel Cinematic
Universe.
Maybe they
could have like dual Spider-Man. Sony gets to do their thing, and then maybe Marvel can bring back Andrew Garfield.
Or Tobey Maguire. Could have old Spider-Man.
Well, you know, the thing is that they, one of the reasons why I think the fan community is so hard hit by all of this is it seems like finally, at least since the first two Sam Raimi films, they got Spidey right.
Mm-hmm.
And he's such a beloved character, and Tom Holland's been great in that role.
He's great.
And the John Watts movies, the standalone movies were great, and Kevin Feige, of course, the genius Louis B. Mayer of our time, figured out how to incorporate Spider-Man into the larger MCU, and to just hear that this is broken is really disappointing to a lot of people, because Sony, I mean, I don't, you know, Venom, I didn't see, but Sony is not going to be as effective with the character as Marvel. That's just my, I'm going to put that out there. And also other elements of the creative team
including the director of the two standalone movies, John Watts, his fate is up in the air too, because he's having a lot of offers being thrown at him from other studios, and Feige's there saying, well, I have this whole MCU, I gotta bring in Fantastic Four.
We have
17
million movies on the slate.
I gotta bring in X-Men, we're gonna lead
bring
up
in
to some
Fantastic
new...
Four.
Yeah. And we'll see how he does it. You know, you don't know how he's gonna do it. It's usually
they
good.
They should bring back Jessica Alba.
That would be great.
Well, Sony's putting
Michael
all their,
Chiklis is
Michael
the thing.
Chiklis, right.
Sony's putting all their eggs in the Morbius, the living vampire.
And I just don't see how that's gonna I just don't see how that works out. And so one hopes that this is part of a negotiation, because I also heard when Deadline broke the story, they said it was a 50-50 split that Disney was demanding. That has since I've now since heard that Disney was actually asking for 30%.
Oh, that's a big
still too much.
Drop.
It is, but 50. The fact that it's going down suggests to me that maybe they'll be able to work out some arrangement and keep this thing going. Because I just for Marvel's purposes, they were clearly working up to have Spider-Man replace Iron Man as kind of the central figure.
But they can't, but here's, so from Disney's perspective, you can't do that when Sony owns Spider-Man. And as long as Spider-Man continues to be successful, Sony has no reason to give up the rights to Spider-Man.
Okay, so here's my solution. Disney should buy Sony.
Yes.
Well, so we should yes,
just like they do with Fox.
So Disney should own 20th Century Fox and Columbia TriStar/Sony.
Done. Look, Fox is already
once,
Fox
and,
is not
and,
long
and then
world.
So once they have 60% of the market, you know, you make a play for the Dark Universe and Universal,
let's
right?
Not
and you
get, can, let's not get crazy.
You can. I'm just saying that you know, Disney is verging very close to monopolistic practices and needs to be careful on how it pursues and throws around its power on
the
this
Fox
sort of thing.
Deal. I mean, the shame of this is because I want Spider-Man in the MCU, and I think Disney should do anything to keep him there.
That's right.
But the shame of it is the Fox deal clearly is not working out, and all that seems like Iger is in panic mode, and sending Alan Horn and a couple other executives there. The Fox movies aren't performing. That Dark Phoenix movie was a flop.
That was amazing.
They are going to. I don't.
They bought 20th Century Fox not for the slate of films that Fox had
for the IP,
but for the IP. The real problem is that they are. Again, this is what I've read. Who knows how true it is? That the Disney Plus streaming service is basically not going to use any of that IP at all. The number of films from the 20th Century Fox library that will be available on streaming is very small. Again, my understanding, I don't know for sure, but that what's the point of buying that giant library and not putting them all on streaming at once? Frankly, just do it and crush Netflix once and for all.
Well, we're getting there, but yeah, that's interesting. Did they give any reason when you read that about why they're not?
I mean, I think they...
a lot of it's adults,
Part of it is because they think that there is not an audience for older films, which is true, and there is not. It's not like there is a zero cost to creating 4K quality streaming files for these movies. You have to go, you have to find the negatives, you have to go through a very laborious process of creating a digital file for it. It is not free. Like there is a cost involved, but I still don't see, you know, if you are Disney and you have access to this enormous library, what is the point of not utilizing it?
You mentioned earlier, just really briefly, but Venom, it made a lot of money, you said. How much? It made a huge...
like 850.
Do you know why? Do you know why? Because of Michelle Williams.
Because of Michelle Williams.
It's
she was the key.
It's hard to play a lifeless cyborg. I don't know how she did that. That was really impressive.
Was that her character?
No.
No.
She just seemed like it. She's like, Okay. But we're not... Okay, so...
What about the Matrix? We're not going to talk about the Matrix 4?
Oh.
More decadence,
how do
right?
they... Decadence. Unless they make them... They could CGI her.
So
her
who
younger.
Owns Matrix?
So the Matrix is owned by Warners, right?
It's Warner, Warners. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
I mean, it's fascinating to me that only one of the Wachowskis is involved, and I don't think any of the other cast aside from Carrie Ann Moss and Keanu Reeves are confirmed. I think it's
Lawrence Fishburne.
I have not seen anything.
Who
about
is
Lawrence
in
Fishburne.
The was in the
John
second
Wick
John Wick. I don't know
and
if he was in. He was in. I haven't, still haven't seen the
even
third
though
one.
He got sliced and diced, he got vivisected and he lived at the end of John Wick. But I bet Joe Pantoliano. So I bet he's around. He'll do the show. He'll go back for Matrix.
Well, he would died.
I thought
person,
he died.
So.
You know,
but no. I mean, I think it's very interesting that this is
and no Hugo Weaving.
Hugo Weaving. He got blown up, right?
He'll
be back.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway, what I fear the most with this is that they are going to turn it in, because red pilled has become such a, you know, term of art on the right and the far right.
Yeah.
That they're going to have to try to reclaim this for the, you know, the liberal masses.
Trump
allegory. It's going to be all about, you know, how terrible all of the right.
Why do you
are.
Need a Matrix film when you have John Wick?
Well, I mean John Wick better. 2 and 3 are basic, feel very much like backdoor Matrix sequels.
Right. I mean, I just don't understand.
Absolutely. No, I don't. No.
And
I assume they drove a dump truck full of money.
To get back to my
Reeves.
Favorite subject of Marvel, there are also rumors that Keanu might be joining the Marvel universe.
Yeah, what? The Eternals, maybe?
Oh. Part of it. Well, and because Angelina Jolie
is going to be
Eternals. In the Eternals. Yeah, right. Maybe there's room for Keanu.
Well, I mentioned Good Boys. It was at the top of the box office. But, you know, Jonathan has been he's been pushing for this movie for a long time.
I went to go see it. It was good.
And you liked it, right? And so people have told me they really enjoy it. And I'm sure Jonathan wants to talk about it. But since he's not here, he's at the beach, we're not going to talk about it. I thought instead we could talk about the number 9 movie.
10.
At the number 10 movie at the box office.
I'm amazed it got that high.
Yeah. Called Blinded by the Light. According to my estimate, it says 4.4. Is that
4.33?
Yeah, okay, rounding it down. $3 million.
The numbers that
I don't
you got
have
on
that.
Monday.
It's a lot of money.
Are out of date.
I didn't check that one.
You didn't update.
I did not check Blinded by the Light. Mm. But I thought, hey, you know, I mean, I like some of Springsteen's stuff. And you guys.
You're a Jersey boy.
I'm a Jersey boy. Yeah. I don't live far from Freehold. And you guys, of course, are big Springsteen fans. Wouldn't it be great if we saw this movie from the director of Bend It Like Beckham? Okay. Oh, my gosh. We're combining all sorts of things. And so I thought that would be a great idea.
So what you're saying is we can blame you.
This is all Vic's fault.
This is all your idea.
I don't know what you're suggesting, but Sonny, why don't you just give our listeners an explanation? What is this movie about?
This movie is about a person who likes music.
No, really likes
this person
music.
No, I mean it's literally just about a guy who likes music, and then the music
about fighting racism.
The music, the music changes his life. He likes the music. He listens to the songs. He likes the music so much that he says the lyrics to people.
He's a fan.
As if they have a talismanic power.
And then they all start dancing.
Bend It Like Beckham. Sing It Like Springsteen, as I like to call this movie, it's set in 1987 in a small town outside of London, where racism is rampant, and a young Pakistani boy who learns to the power within himself through the music of Bruce Springsteen to fight against the racism. And I don't know, man. Here's my problem with this movie. I have two problems with this movie. I have three problems with this movie. The first is that it's boring. I was literally just bored in the theater. I almost walked out twice. I mean,
out of sheer boredom. Why am I here?
I want to get to that after the commercial break because I really want. Okay.
The projector stopped working at one point in my theater.
That would have been an excuse.
And I almost walked out.
Who would notice?
I almost walked out. My second problem with this movie is that it is literally the exact same movie as Bend It Like Beckham. It's a child of an immigrant family in England who strains against his traditional the traditional norms and practices of his family until he discovers a Western cultural practice that gives him a new life and sense of purpose. And there's also a wedding. There's a sibling is getting married, and he has to leave the wedding. The main character leaves the wedding in both films to go do the Western cultural practice. But it is literally just beat for beat the same exact movie, which would have been less annoying if I hadn't watched Bend It Like Beckham literally the day before I went to see Blinded by the Light. And third, the problem it has the whole aesthetic of the movie. Is blindingly literal literal. Like, it is like he's standing, he's listening to music, and he's out in a storm, and the lyrics are on the screen, and then he listens to Born to Run with his friends, and they're running through the streets of the town, and they're doing like weird dances and stuff, but it's also not quite the magical realism sort of thing that like Rocket Man did, right? Like, it's not so literal that it is portraying what is happening in the songs. It's just like the lyrics of the song are on the screen. So like I was, you know, kind of iffy on Rocket Man. I don't think the whole thing worked, but I was never bored by it because there was always something kind of crazy happening on the screen. And this is just really, really dull. Like he's listening to music and we're seeing the lyrics, and it's like, why on earth would I possibly care about this? I don't care about any of this. So everything about this movie annoyed me when it wasn't boring me. Something, 1.5 stars out of 5. I thought it was according to Letterboxd.
Thank you. I thought that was 1.5 out of 2. That's what I was saying. You weren't moved at all about like, oh, the father gets laid off and he's like wandering the streets looking for a job, but there's no job for him.
Try to make it real.
The father is the best part of the film.
The best part of the film.
He's a great man. And also, I hope there's going to be more of you and Matt singing Springsteen on the show, because that was really good.
This is a problem with the film, is that like these guys just sing lyrics to each other or to other people.
You don't think that's real?
No, it's nonsense.
You didn't do that when you were in high school?
It's annoying. You know what this movie made me realize? That music is childish. It's time to put away childish things and hit the books.
Fandom is child. This is a movie about fandom. And I could relate to Javed, the protagonist, in this sense, which is that there are certain people at certain times in your life, you get really into something.
Yes.
Including musicians. Mm-hmm. And I am willing to confess here on air that I got really into Dave Matthews Band in high school and college.
That was your Springsteen.
And so I could see some of myself in this character. Now, that phase ended, right?
2 years ago.
What did you say?
Well, they have the DMB Summer Channel on XM that I'm listening to on occasion. Nonetheless, yeah. But with the journalist who the character Javed is based on, who wrote a memoir that Chandra, the director, turned into this movie, that clearly has not ended. And Springsteen has become almost like a religious symbol in this guy's life. Yeah, so it's a movie about fandom. But Sonny's absolutely right that the way that the music is integrated into the film doesn't work. And if it had just been a movie about this family, it actually would have been pretty good. It'd been more interesting to me.
If it had been more like Bend It Like Beckham, frankly.
Right.
Bend It Like Beckham was a fun movie to watch. This could be the darker version, right? Mm-hmm. Because
it's very dark.
You know, you're dealing with racism.
National
you're dealing with the guy who... the immigrant story that's not quite working out,
right?
And you're dealing with the teenager who, you know, he's a sensitive soul and old soul. But instead, it's like you just these random things. He starts singing, and it's why?
I just wished, you know, if this were in 2019, he would have been able to find a job in this gig economy. He could have been an Uber driver, right? He could have been a food deliverer. Speaking of which, here's a scenario for you. Your sweatpants are on for the day, but you're sick of microwave leftovers and frozen pizza. Enter DoorDash, restaurant quality food with a living room dress code. DoorDash connects you to your favorite restaurants in your city. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be delivered to you wherever you are. Not only is your favorite pizza joint already on DoorDash, but there are over 340,000 restaurants in 3,300 cities, so you might find a new favorite too. With door-to-door delivery in all 50 states and Canada, order from your local go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, Chick-fil-A, and the Cheesecake Factory. Don't worry about dinner. Let dinner come to you with DoorDash. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code SUBBEACON. That's $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter promo code SUBBEACON. Don't forget, that's promo code SUBBEACON for $5 off your first order from DoorDash. Matt. You didn't like this movie.
I really didn't like it. But I will say that my troubles began before the film started. Mm-hmm. I also like to say, I think this is the first time I've been on the show since Rogue One came out where all of the panelists saw the movie. So I think this is an achievement that
progress.
We should be proud
We're
of.
Making progress.
But I go to the Ballston Regal Cinema. First, I asked the attendant, I said, is there a coffee shop? Because I'm early. Is there a coffee shop in this mall? And they, no. Apparently, no. So
the new Ballston Mall doesn't have a Starbucks.
And if like it does, it is invisible. Four. It is invisible to the employees of the Regal Cinema. So, all right. So I said, fine. I'll have a medium soda.
Oh, boy.
And they said, what size? They said, medium Diet Coke. Okay. How many ounces, Sonny Budge, is in a medium?
64.
44 ounces. Yeah. 44 ounces.
You get like a gallon.
And how much does it cost?
$7.
$7. Mm-hmm. 44 ounce mm-hmm. soda. So mm-hmm. I got this. And
do you at least get a free refill?
Why would you need one? Right. I almost had to get dialysis just because I drank all of it throughout the movie.
There's a great thing about this though, Matt, which is when you the goal you think is you finish the entire soda and then you'd have to go to the bathroom. You don't need to go to the bathroom. You just use the giant container.
And you're in an empty theater because you're seeing Blinded by the Light, so yeah, it doesn't matter.
Well, you're in per se.
There are three all people right. in the theater. The movie starts. For the first 15 minutes, I'm saying, hold it. Why is Bronson Pinchot starring in this movie? The actor,
perfect strangers.
Yeah, see, the actor who plays Javid is literally like a young
Bronson Pinchot.
So I didn't quite understand that.
Cousin.
Okay. The best thing about the film was the dad. The music didn't quite work. The politics was so heavy-handed.
Oh.
It was so heavy to the point where, and you know the shot.
I know the shot.
Yeah. There's the climactic scene is the funeral. The funeral's interrupted because of a National Front
wedding.
March. Oh, I'm sorry. The wedding. The wedding is interrupted because of the National Front March. It's a terrible situation. Similarities to Charlottesville, I think, was on the director's mind.
National Front was a real problem,
right?
In England in the
absolutely.
In the 80s.
And look, these are live issues and everything. But then, just to make sure everyone knew what she was talking about, the director just leaves the camera or pans tilt slightly upward so you can see the Margaret Thatcher re-election poster.
Margaret Thatcher re-election poster. She's just waving, but
it says unity.
And underneath it says vote conservative.
Yeah. And I was just come on, you know.
And it lingered on the shot. I felt like it lingered there for 10 minutes.
It's really interesting because it shows how differently British people look at the 80s as opposed to the Americans,
yes.
right? Because right now we're in the midst of this huge wave of 80s nostalgia in the United States, and as exemplified by Stranger Things,
which you get to in a little bit,
we love it. We just want to kind of like curl up in this blanket of the 1980s, and I think the British have a very different view.
Certainly, liberal Brits,
right? The liberal Brits dominate almost all sectors of opinion, even more than in America, right?
I mean,
so you just get that overwhelming negative attitude toward what many Americans think of. Hold it, Lady T, Iron Lady, she's awesome.
Wasn't she trying to modernize Britain, bring it into
the 21st
century?
You had, you know, so it was a very interesting kind of juxtaposition, I think. But overall, so here's my question. Was the principal of the school, is that the Swedish prime minister?
Yes.
So she's the best. She's next to the dad.
She has also four
lines in the movie, and yet nonetheless, just because she evoked memories of Veep for me, I was happy. I was happy to see her. Finally, I would say the problem with this protagonist is he's just so earnest, and I just got so tired. I just want to be myself.
Yeah.
I just want to be free.
Yeah.
I just, no one understands. Ernest. I just wanted to say, shut the up, you know, I'm like, get over it. But now, of course, that's many teenagers.
Yes, that's right. That's why I think we're coming at it.
But
from
he
the
has
old
it pretty good. He gets a girlfriend. He has his good friend who introduces him. He has something he cares about. Bruce Springsteen. He clearly has a loving family. Dad's tough. But that's life. You know. Mm-hmm. I was like, come on, man. His poetry sucked.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. The poetry was terrible.
Yeah.
It was the worst. Why are we supposed to think he's a good writer? He was awful. His rhymes were so terrible.
Yeah, the father was right.
Yeah, he was.
Why don't you go into engineering?
And I'm on a roll here. The best line of the movie was he has this endearing English friend named Matt, who's across the street, and Matt likes more new wave music. And
the synth.
Synth is the wave of the future, and he has the 80s haircut and everything. But they get into a fight, and I burst out laughing when the friend goes, just you and your Bruce Springsteen philosophies. I'm alone in this. Well, the other people have. What is a Bruce Springsteen philosophy?
I don't know.
What is it?
Be true to yourself. Work hard.
Because you know, here's the thing about Bruce Springsteen. As he says in the live show, in the Broadway show, he made it all up. It's all narrative. He just makes it up.
But people can relate. They said he's talking to me. And it doesn't. And this is where he transcends it. By the way, the friend that you know, that's Tommen Baratheon. Did you know that? That's from.
Oh, really? Oh, that's Tommen.
Yeah,
okay.
He's Game of Thrones. Yeah. Before. Yeah.
Well, it's hard to see him under all that.
It's that hair. Wait, it's that, poor man Steve from Stranger Things.
He does kind of look like Steve Harrigan. Yeah.
I have my question to you is this. Okay, so they play all the hits, right? They play all the hits. Everything is great, and a lot of the songs. I assume you like all the songs in the movie. Did the movie, as a result, did the movie ruin any of the songs here? Because it did for me. And I'll tell you what happened. My favorite Springsteen song is Thunder Road. It's amazing. You know, the professor who plays the piano in the beginning. What's his name?
Professor Roy Bittan.
Roy Bittan. He's fantastic. It's a very hard piece to play. It's a beautiful piece. Clarence Clemons, the sax at the end. I love that song. And now when I hear it, all I can think of is Rob Brydon in that ridiculous wig. And they're serenading the square. It ruined it now.
It was Rob Brydon. So that is another instance of where the movie like goes into this weird, almost but not quite magical realism moment. And like if they had gone full bore with it. If they had just like committed to the like we're living in the world of Springsteen. And I would have been like, okay, that's at least a choice. But instead, it's this wishy-washy halfway thing where, like, some of the people are dancing and some of the people are looking on with disgust. And, like, it annoyed me. So it was funny that you mentioned Rob Brydon because I was like, who is that? And while I was watching it, I thought to myself, oh, that's the guy from Chernobyl who works at the plant, who like runs the plant, Bruhanov or whatever.
No.
I was like, oh yeah, that's him. No, and then I looked it up after. I was like, that's Rob Brydon. I like him much more.
Yeah, the trip.
I like him much more. What is he doing in this terrible movie?
I know, and singing and ruining it with his English voice, like that voice, and singing the song and the lyrics.
Oh, stuff.
I really wanted to like this movie because I do like Bruce Springsteen a lot. I like the idea of like Bruce Springsteen being a figure, a transformational figure that works across cultures and you know, ideological boundaries and cultural barriers and all that. And I just was watching this movie and I was like, I hate everybody on screen. I hate all these people. I hate the fact that they like the music I like. I am just like, these people all annoy me. I
had the sense, by the way, so, you know, you watch the trailer and I thought that Going to America was going to be an integral part of this movie. Like, I can't wait till they go to New Jersey. And then you get
it's a montage. It's just a montage.
But it's you know what? I enjoyed that part.
That is,
I enjoyed that montage. I liked the scene at immigration, at the border control, where you get a sense of, oh, is this American officer going to be a little bit stereotypical or wonder? And it turns out, oh, that's awesome that you came here to see. So I like that. I like this.
America, the idea of Springsteen breaking down the boundaries and pulling people together.
But
I like that.
America comes off great in this movie because he clearly had a great time, then, even though he went to Asbury Park, which back in the day was a dangerous place.
I was going to say, it actually looks like Luton.
Yeah.
Right?
That's exactly right.
But so then he goes home, and it's the sister's wedding, and who in his right mind ditches a sister's wedding to go get tickets to Wembley Stadium? And as a viewer, you're watching this, and I said he's not going to go to the concert. Well, you already know the plot point.
Yeah,
the dad is going to rip the tickets up.
That's the thing.
There's going to be another fight. Oh, you don't understand me.
Why not just have Roops go get it?
Right. Why didn't Roops get it?
He was
great.
Roops go get the tickets.
He was great. He was ahead of the curve.
I would have watched a whole movie about Roops.
Roops is, go ahead. Sorry, explain who is Roops?
He's Roops. The friend.
Roops he's a Sikh.
Roops
he's a
is the Sikh friend who introduces Javed to the wonders of Bruce Springsteen.
And he does not have a girlfriend. So
Oh my God. So the most ridiculous scene in the movie is the Born to Run scene where they're running through the streets and poor Roops is like the third wheel in all of these shots. So it's like Javed with his girlfriend and they're like jumping up in the air and then you can see Roops in the background.
The background.
Poor Roops all by himself in the background also jumping like, I'm here too. I felt so bad for him.
It was very awkward.
It's tough to be the third wheel.
Yeah. Now let me say this and we can move on. Also, I'm watching this carefully, and a lot of, I mean, there were a lot of moments that make you cringe, you know, the high school.
2 hours.
The kid and the DJ, the high school DJ guy, I could barely watch that guy, you know, the tunes. It was really weird. But here's my thing, right? I lived through this. I'm basically about 2 years younger than them at that time, right? 1987. So I'm 14. I remember what that was like. And you know what? There is not one mention of U2 in the Joshua Tree, which was a big deal at that time, right? It was a big, that was the big album. What are they making reference to, the Pet Shop Boys or whatever it is?
Your problem with this movie is that there wasn't enough U2 in the Bruce Springsteen movie.
And I think I know.
And was U2 as big in England as it was in America?
Oh, it has to be. Absolutely. It was just over the, you know,
They were Irish.
Yeah. It was interesting that they said.
It was a big deal. And I think the reason is they probably, because they couldn't afford it.
To have U2 stuff.
Yeah, whereas they can afford Level 42's Lesson in Love.
And Pet Shop Boys.
And Pet Shop Boys and Debbie Gibson.
And
that's my theory.
You know, they kept saying Bruce Springsteen is your dad's music. That was interesting
to me.
That's
weird too, because what we're talking about is 10 years apart.
Because
it is
a very weird moment in the Bruce Springsteen career, right?
That's
right. Because it's around the time Tunnel of Love is coming out. It's a Tunnel of Love concert that he's supposed to go to. But the E Street Band is breaking up.
Tunnel of Love is kind of one of the, you know, it's a lesser known album.
It's bad. It's not a good album.
I love that song, though. It's one of my favorite songs. Oh, my God.
You would. But it's like right around the time that Springsteen is like breaking up with the E Street Band and he's going to go do his own solo thing. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of like the beginning of the wilderness years, which is, again, I actually kind of appreciate that sense of almost outsiderness, like liking an kind of outsider art, or you know.
Did your theater have the
a lot of Indians? You were gonna ask.
The preview for the Bruce,
yes.
I guess, live event,
yes.
Slash
live
the
concerts.
Western, yes,
yeah, like it's
the
not,
event.
It's not like a Fathom
like half
event
a,
or something.
No, but it's a
like,
film. But it seemed like it was a special event. I couldn't quite understand what
it looks like. Well, it looks like they shot a concert in a barn in like Montana or someplace.
And it was 1,000 times more interesting and captivating 100%, 100%, than the 2-hour runtime movie I had to sit through after. I was like, why can't you just have Springsteen?
Let's just watch that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I was thinking, you know, my sister owned is it 75 to 85, the live? You can get
great
that.
Set,
it's like
yeah.
a, it's like a, it's like how many right. albums in that?
I think it was a 5 LP, 3 CDs.
They play
CD
some tracks
set.
From that
right,
in the film.
Right. And I was thinking about that time. What did I own at that time in 1980s? You know what I had? I had a cassette tape of Belinda Carlisle's Heaven on Earth. Let me tell you something. Hot stuff. Hot Circle
there
of
were
the
a lot
Sand.
Of, there were a lot of Genesis albums in the Continetti car.
Oh, really?
Thanks to my dad. Yeah.
Phil Collins, too. No Jacket Required. And I remember at the time being so sick of like No Jacket Required. But you look back on it, it's a good album.
It's a great album.
Good album. Okay. You were talking, Matt. We're going to go really quickly through this. Speaking of 80s nostalgia.
Transition.
Now is our chance, thank you, to talk about other shows that JVL doesn't watch. Stranger Things 3.
Yeah.
I really like this, but the question is, and listeners have been saying, when are you going to talk about Stranger Things 3? I love it, but is it only because I lived through it? Is it not that great because I could have sat through whole hours of hanging out in the mall? You liked it.
I did like Stranger Things 3. I liked it better than Stranger Things 2.
Wow. Which was very, 2 I thought was very dark.
It was dark. It was their kind of aliens movie. That was the one that was, this one though is a combination of a lot of different
Red Dawn
movies. Red Dawn, The Terminator, also The Thing is a big influence on them all the time. But you have that. And I liked, so what they did with this one, because it's the first season of Stranger Things that comes out in the summer, is they made their version of a summer blockbuster.
That's right.
And I liked the over-the-top elements. I liked the fact that the Russian hitman resembles Arnold in profile and shadow. I liked the fact the big blow-ups and the huge conspiracies. And that I thought that it was really entertaining. Now, it does raise a question, how are they going to top it?
Right.
And I have real fears about the future of this franchise. But Stranger Things 3, on the whole, I thought was a lot of fun and very enjoyable.
Sonny, you like? Did you like? Did you enjoy it, or it was like eh for you?
I thought it was fine. Here's it's funny. You had said you wanted to talk about Stranger Things, and I asked why. Here's the thing. I enjoyed it. I watched the whole show. I watched it in like 3 days. Whatever.
It's been out now for 2 months. Right.
Yeah. And I'm already kind of forgetting like what happened in it. It's like this with the second season for me. I literally could not remember a single thing that happened in that. By the time I started watching the third season.
Is that right?
And I
it resonates with me. I tend to remember a lot.
I'm now kind of sitting here. I'm like, okay, yeah, the Terminator thing was good. They had that. They had the fun thing in the carnival.
Yep.
That was kind of neat. And then
did you like the video, the never ending story montage, which goes completely?
God, I thought that was silly.
That was too silly.
You know what? I liked it.
Didn't do anything.
The thing about it was they sang the whole.
Half.
Yeah,
more it just almost kept going. Almost.
And,
kept going.
And if he had just done a verse of it, mm-hmm. I thought it would have been fine. Mm-hmm. But the problem is it went into a music video. It hurt the pacing of what was a very exciting climax. The other thing, though, maybe we to talk about briefly is mall culture, which is what season three is about. And the Starcourt Mall set is a huge element of the show. And that was, you know, if you think about Stranger Things, obviously they're selling nostalgia. And, you know, they're kind of running out of nostalgia in the 80s because they're pushing up at the limits of the decade and the kids are getting older. But they got the mall there. Oh. And it was fun to see. I mean, just the level
stores.
The level of production design. Remember the fake gravel that would be in the atriums?
Yes, absolutely.
They even had that. And they had the stores. Uh-huh. And, you know, it was fun because now, of course, malls are disappearing.
Yeah,
it was kind of fun to see that.
It was the future. And small town America is dying because everyone's going to the mall. Now, of course, it's the big boxes and nobody goes to the malls anymore. I mean, so I thought that was very true. I could talk about malls forever.
So what were your thoughts about Stranger Things?
I mean, it's like...
I'm kind of with Sonny. I don't remember much of it. I remember that I didn't like the cliffhanger. They better not.
Oh, yeah.
If we do spoiler alert or something, they better not bring back the character who we think is gone.
Oh, of course he is.
I know that. That's my point. This is why I don't think the fourth season is going to be very good.
Unless the entire season takes place in Kamchatka. You know, how do they get him out? Through a tunnel.
They got to move. They had to move on.
Eleven will get her psychic powers back, and she'll be able to transport him psychically.
Yes, so the move... That'll be the thing is her getting her powers.
Now I just remember they depowered her. They depowered her, which was a smart choice.
I liked that choice.
Which was a smart choice because the whole
she had about as much power as Will.
One of the big problems with the show is that it resembles do you remember the South Park with the you guys don't watch South Park, do you? There was a South Park episode where these fake psychics came to town and Cartman pretended he was a psychic and they're like, we're the psychics, and he's like, no, I'm a psychic, and they like held their hands out each other and went nah, like they were doing psychic power. And like that's everything
that's
with
Millie
L.
Bobby Brown.
That's everything with L to me is her just kind of like holding her hands out doing psychic
things and then
things.
Screaming
then whatever she's pointing at blows up or whatever. And I'm just like, I'm tired
too
of that.
Powerful.
Tired of it. She's overpowered. Mm-hmm. She's overpowered. So depowering her is a good choice, I think, which gives me a little bit of hope for the next season.
Yeah, no, we'll if they keep it, it depends on when she gets the powers back.
She'll get the powers back.
Why didn't Paul Reiser have any lines
until the end?
Paul Reiser should have been all over
Paul Reiser was great.
I love Paul Reiser.
It was great when he was back. I like that. I'll tell you, here's the other thing, is that and you and I talked about this when, 4 years ago when we first watched the show. The pairings, because there are so many characters, they paired up into teams, and I thought that the Dustin Steve team was the best by far.
I totally agree. I'd rather watch. I could watch
then
that all the time.
Then the 11 Mike team was good. Okay. I liked that Mad Max. I liked that whole thing. I liked the Billy. You know, but then they had the Joyce.
What about the journalism?
The
team?
Joyce Hopper team.
Okay.
Was terrible. Yeah. I got on my nerves so much. I mean,
you know what? See, again, this is me. That was my first love was Winona Ryder.
Well, I love her too, but
and
like,
you know what? She's quirky and annoying.
David Harbour character
too much.
He got annoying. He was good at the beginning of the season where he's protective,
where he's doing the dad stuff. That's great.
But then on this mission, and then they get that annoying conspiracy theorist who is actually pretty good because he ends up befriending the scientist.
Alexei Smirnoff. Yes,
but with the Joyce Hopper stuff, I just I did not like. They're always arguing.
How about the newspaper reporters on the trail?
I know. I just
shoe leather. That was real shoe leather, man.
What's the character's
Nancy,
name?
Nancy.
Nancy.
And
yeah. Well, and then you have the kind of one. Who is that in the? That is one of the guy who plays the editor is the son of.
The guy who Nick plays Nol- the editor.
It's,
the, one of the edit editors is
Jake Busey.
Jake Busey, not Nolte, Gary Busey.
Very closely,
son, Jake
often
Busey.
Confused, yeah. By the way. Yeah, Jake, yeah. Busey, Jake Busey.
So, and he kind of played the obnoxious character, but it didn't really mean anything. And they also didn't really use Carrie Hughes.
Elwes?
Elwes.
Yeah, Elwes.
They didn't use him very much.
Yeah, he
was kind of, I don't know if he was trying to pull off some sort of Reagan thing going on there with his sort of smart.
You got it. So here's my advice to the Duffer Brothers, not that they need it. You got to follow 11 into the town. Go to a new town.
Yeah,
new different new antagonists.
She's staying in the old town, right? It's Will that's leaving.
No, she's going with them.
Oh, she's
Joyce
yeah,
has
she's
adopted her because
oh,
she's
that's right,
lost
that's
Hopper.
Right, that's right. Yeah. I forgot. Right, I forgot.
So she's separated from Mike.
Hopper's not there.
And I assume. So here's my other piece. What they have not yet done is a Christmas. So I think you set Christmas and you take Gremlins.
Oh,
and you make it a little bit funnier, a little bit, you know.
I like that.
But enough with this mind flayer guy and the. It's three seasons now. Move on.
Right.
Find something new.
It's gotta be dead, right? It's not dead because the Soviets found one.
Just ignore it. Pretend that it's. Maybe there's something else in the Upside Down. Maybe
there's
like
all.
Little,
it's a whole. It's a whole universe, right?
They promised that. That was the promise in the first season. There's this whole universe. It ends up there's just like two things.
Maybe she goes. Maybe she goes to the new town, and it's like a happier part of the Upside Down with Gremlins, and then the Gremlins turn evil and start mind flying everyone.
You know what?
You and I. Let's get us in the writer's room. We could have the whole thing outlined by the end of the movie.
Okay. I wanted more about Billy and Mrs. Wheeler. I thought that was going to be interesting.
Yeah, I know you did. Well, I'm sure you've done some research.
It's a great song to that, too, Living in Stereo. Okay, since JVL isn't here, I had a question about the gay veto subplot in The Sopranos.
You haven't been able to talk about Sopranos.
No, I haven't. Okay, in The Wire, D'Angelo Barksdale, I thought about him actually when Jeffrey Epstein was, died in prison. Because D'Angelo, of course, they said he hung himself. But in The Wire, but of course somebody did it.
Yeah,
and made it look like it.
See, I've never watched The Wire either. So I'm in JVL's camp there.
Okay, let me ask you this, to go back, because I know how much we want to talk about Blinded by the Light again. When you were their age, did you keep a journal like he? Oh, by the way, I like the English teacher. By the way, didn't you?
Haley Atwell,
like,
love her.
Oh, from Captain America.
I hated her character because it's just this annoying. It's the same. It's a trope. It's you need to find your individuality and speak out.
Not that any of you will have jobs.
Yeah, people do not have unique. Yeah. The older I get,
necessary.
There's no such thing as a unique voice. You know, Wordsworth had a unique voice.
If I wrote, everyone else, let me tell you something. If this was a movie in the 80s, I'd write it. There would have been a relationship between the teacher and the student.
You had so many relationships going on. You got Billy and.
It would have been like, I would have turned Blinded by the Light to like My Tutor, which would have been a much better movie. And it was a better movie. But you didn't do a journal. You didn't keep it going?
I tried. I was, I wanted to be a writer. And I thought, that's what you need to do. But I could not keep it up. And the truth is, again, I just wasn't that interested in my feelings.
I was thinking he has a lot of feelings. Because how many journal books was there? Six, seven books.
It's like one for every year.
One for every year.
He really hated his dad. Mm-hmm.
He did.
And, that's common. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is why
that's why it's not interesting, because it's so common.
I agree. I give it a B minus. I think that if
the movie,
the movie. I give the movie a B minus. That's how much I didn't like the movie.
I mean, his baseline is an A minus.
Are you grading on a curve?
The Vic curve.
I'm one of those professors. But I thought, what's funny is today, of course, I guess they don't carry around journals. They would be all in the cloud. Speaking of the cloud, this episode of the Subbeacon is sponsored by NetSuite. If you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business. But the problem growing businesses have that keeps them from knowing their numbers is their hodgepodge of business systems. They have one system for accounting, another for sales, another for inventory, and so on. It's just a big, inefficient mess, taking up too much time and too many resources, and that hurts the bottom line. Introducing NetSuite by Oracle. the business management software that handles every aspect of your business in an easy-to-use cloud platform, giving you the visibility and control you need to grow. With NetSuite, you save time, money, and unneeded headaches by managing sales, finance, and accounting, orders, and HR instantly right from your desktop or phone. That's why NetSuite is the world's number one cloud business system. And right now, NetSuite is offering you valuable insights with a free guide, 7 key strategies to grow your profits at netsuite.com/subbeacon. That's netsuite.com/subbeacon to download your free guide, 7 key strategies to grow your profits, netsuite.com/subbeacon. Any other corrections, additions? Nothing. We're good. We're good? Okay, great. That is all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments. Tweet us at Victorina Manis, at Sunny Bunch, at Continetti. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Just type in Subbeacon on a podcast. We're there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time. So next.
Fun.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Do you enjoy that, Matt?
I did. It's fun to all see the movie, you know, and be able to talk about the movie.
Sometimes that doesn't happen.
Sometimes it doesn't. A lot of times that I've been on the show, it doesn't happen.
Yeah. Or
well, the last time I did it was the Guillermo del Toro episode, but I didn't see the Hellboy movie because it was too scary. Then Jonathan didn't see it. Because he's Jonathan.
Well, you're the same way. You don't go for scary movies. Then.
I hate scary movies.
So,
yeah.
So what are you going to do when we have you back to do it?
Yeah, I'm going to politely decline.
Nah, it'll be fine.